Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Bitches Be Brave podcast, where we talk about support for each other and what it means to be brave as a mom, as a woman, as a working mom. I'm your host, Bev Steele, and quite frankly, work-life balance is crap. We all just want a life. Thank you for joining me today. Welcome back, everyone. It's been a crazy week. I don't know if any of the rest of you have felt this, but things are definitely picking up as things are opening up and we're getting back to normal. And I think as things speed up, it's so very important for us to take a moment and decide what our new normal is going to be. That is why I think my guest today, Erin King, will resonate with so many of you as she did with me. Erin is a best-selling author who founded three companies before the age of 40. Wow, right? Her story is one that we all want to listen to. It's a story of resilience, of not giving up, and understanding that really a setback is just before the comeback. And I don't know why we think that our plan has to be a straight line or be easy. And when we hit rock bottom, that's not the time to give up. That's the time to pick yourself up and say, okay, what have I learned from this? And how am I moving forward? And, you know, really, I love our conversation about how we as women navigate our professional relationship and really make those bridges to a more personal relationship at work. You know, it's really crazy to think about having a personal relationship at work because we as women are in constant struggle between our relationships at home, at work, and it even becomes more of a struggle when the dynamic is male-female. So Erin guides us about how to be persuasive and really finding your superpower as women, having to navigate being strong and direct with what may come naturally as maybe we shouldn't act in that way in the workplace. So this is really our time to level up, and we can say, and I want all of you to say this, hey, I'm kind of a big deal, and be okay with it. So I think you're going to really love what Erin and I explore today during this interview. So here we go.
Hey guys, we're just taking a quick break to tell you about an amazing new wine that we just discovered. You guys know that nobody loves a glass of wine more than we do, but when we learned what is actually in the wine that we were drinking, we were shocked. No wonder we are getting headaches, brain fog, and having trouble sleeping.
That's right, Heather, but then we discovered dry farm wines. Dry farm wines are organically crafted, unprocessed wine free of sugar, additives, and lower in alcohol. These wines are amazing, and they're better for our bodies and our planet. Now we can enjoy the pleasure and euphoria of wine without the negative effects of higher alcohol consumption.
To find out where you can try these amazing wines and get a special Bitches Be Brave discount, click on the link in our show notes below.
Hi, Erin. Welcome. I'm so excited to have you here.
Hey, Beverly. Thanks for having me. So pumped to be here.
Before we get started, I would just love if you could spend a little bit of time and tell your story.
Yeah, well, my story is I'm from the East Coast. So I'm two-thirds East Coast, one-third West Coast. Live here in Laguna Beach with my Cavapoo named Betty White and my super cute Southern husband from Alabama, Hartman. And we work together. We have a company, Socialite Agency, which is primarily focused on helping women level up how they show up online, offline, and all the time. So that's our jam. And you know, my backstory is I started off as a 100% commissioned ad sales rep, slinging TV ads back in Baltimore, Maryland. So you're in San Diego, so this might resonate for you, but picture like Anchorman meets The Wire kind of coming together. And that was like my life running around Baltimore. Well, anyway, yeah. So started off doing that. And I was up for a promotion against my counterpart, this guy named James. And I had better sales numbers, but James played golf with the boys club. And I was 23 years old, and I'll never forget, he got the promotion. And in that moment, I realized like, wow, I am not really in charge of how this story unfolds. And so I fully Jerry Maguire'd, like, who's coming with me? And of course, no one came with me because I was 23, didn't know anything. Why would they? Right. Totally jumped ship and started my first company. Within a year, I had to shut it down. I mean, I was in $70,000 of credit card debt. I had no business experience. I had no startup capital. I just made every mistake in the book. So I had to go back to corporate America. No shame in that game. But if you're going to do corporate, it's ideal is to start in corporate and stay in corporate, right? Build the nest egg, get the 401k.
Yes.
Like, if you're going to play it, right?
Yeah.
But so I ran social and digital strategy for a Fortune 100 company here in Irvine called auction.com, which was like an eBay for real estate, and got all my experience, dug out of my debt, got the itch again, raised capital from a bunch of Newport Beach guys here. And I started a tampon delivery service called PMS.com.
Wow.
So we were trying to be a Dollar Shave Club for women's monthly healthcare needs.
Yeah.
Forbes magazine called us the tampon fairies. I thought it was a genius idea because I was always the girl under the stall being like, excuse me, cute shoes. This is awkward, but can I borrow a tampon?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, this is brilliant, right? No, turns out false. It was not brilliant. Most women are just responsible adults that get them at the grocery store. It is not that big of a deal.
So. Well, I'm a mom of three daughters, and I like, didn't I just buy some? When we're all menstruating at the same time, you go through them quite a bit. Maybe it was wrong target market.
I wonder if it would work these days, you know, in these times, but back then this was 2014.
Yeah.
So we had like five competitors crop up that were trying to imitate what we were doing. And luckily, no one really figured it out. No one figured out how to make the margins work, how to take on these giant companies that have owned this market, the two competitors for, you know, 50 or 100 years, whatever.
Yeah.
So I had to close it down after 18 months. And that was the lowest point, for sure, of my entire career because, you know, we've been in Forbes and raised seven figures of capital. And I had to tell a boardroom full of all dudes that not only were we not going to be the unicorn billion-dollar success story, but that I had not gotten them a return on their investment at all.
Oh.
So it was a low. I mean, definitely like ironic because the CEO or former CEO, PMS.com, was so stressed out and so unhappy and depressed. I stopped getting my period, ironically. And my hair was falling out in the shower. And I remember there was one day where I had a, this is so insane to think about, but I had a cell phone bill, Beverly, that was $100. And I did not have enough money in my checking account to pay the cell phone bill after being in Forbes, after doing corporate and starting two companies. And it was just the rock bottom, lowest moment. And I gave myself basically another month. And I was like, look, if you can't pay your next month's cell phone bill, it's not that the idea isn't good enough or the timing is wrong or whatever your excuses you're telling yourself. At some point, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and just say, you know what? You just might not have what it takes. I mean, you might get to submit that you're not enough for this. Mm. And go back and get a job and grow up and be an adult. Again, no shame in the corporate game, but if you're going to do it, start and stay with it. You don't dabble. So yeah, I gave myself till the next month. And I'll never forget journaling like a mad woman. And I'm sure you're a journaler, you know, writing down all the, and the weirdest things will show up on the page, you know, like, so on mine, it showed up and said, the stars will align. And I'm like, that is some California hippy dippy BS that I've ever heard some in my life. Cause the stars are not going to pay the cell phone bill, right? So I made this huge, crazy list of like insane big clients. Because what I had found was that in the failure of PMS.com, in the smoldering dumpster fire of the company PMS.com, like we all do, I found my superpower. I found what I actually was good at, which was that PMS.com's online community, the social media network, was actually a huge success. We had at the time, it was the internet's largest collection of women, millions and millions of women talking about everything from, you know, memes and jokes and to PMS chocolate recipes to interesting articles around healthcare and studies and research. And it was this crazy, vibrant, awesome space for women to come together and connect. And so even though I sucked at being a CEO, I was good at building community. And so I took that and I parlayed that into my third company, which was my last time, right? Third time was a charm. And I started working with one local company, and I made a list of all these big clients. And of course, no one answered me when I wrote them. Like, will you hire us? Will you hire us? No. It was like the Super Bowl and, you know, the Olympics, all these crazy big moonshot clients. And no one answered me, except for one client did answer me. And I remember I was anchoring on that mantra, the stars will align, like over and over again in the shower running. And the one client that did answer ended up turning into, from a DM to a video call, to a meeting in their fancy office in Los Angeles. And I was driving my beat up Prius on the 405 and any of the little downhills coasting to save gas. Didn't have enough money to get home. I was afraid I wasn't going to get back to Laguna. And I remember walking out of that meeting with a contract in my hands to run social media community building for the world's largest entertainment event, the Academy Awards. And in that moment, when I went to the Oscars, like 3 months later, I hired my friends. We worked our butts off. We rocked it. And I ran into Reese Witherspoon backstage, my very favorite actress of all time, birthday twin Elle Woods.
You're working with your husband now. Did he start this business? Did you meet him during this? Or how did that happen?
No, my husband, he's an investor. So he invests in lots of different like fintech companies and software as a service. And he's also a programmer and engineer. So he builds algorithms. He works a lot with like AI and computer vision, machine learning. I started all these ventures before I met him. So he actually met me when I was at that dark, dark moment. So he met me at the worst non-sexy time you can ever meet someone that you want to date. Like I was crying in the shower, stressed out all the time. I was a hot mess. And I remember meeting him and being like, I love this guy. Why couldn't I just meet him like in 5 years when I'm not like a disaster? But that's not right. How life works, right?
Yeah.
So, he has a ton of his own projects, but he does all of our finances. And also he comes with me to my events and does my video production. So everyone, it's so funny because he's like way smarter than me and more successful than I am. But he'll come with the video camera and everyone's like, oh, it's just like her dumb like camera guy. And he's like, keep being the camera guy, you know? So
they only know.
Yeah. So he probably donates, I don't know, a couple hours a week to helping me, but he's the best. I'm very, very lucky.
That is so great. It's a good story. And you guys are doing fine through the lockdown and stuff in COVID, working together and being together.
It has been, I don't know what your situation has been in your house, Beverly, but it has definitely been a ride. I think, you know, in relationships, they're tough during all times. And I think that this has been a real test for a lot of marriages that you're going to kind of grow or go one of two ways. And luckily, knock on wood, we have certainly had the knockdown dragout days. But knock on wood, as of this moment, we are definitely closer than ever, which is awesome. a lot of together time.
Yeah. And I think it makes
How about you guys?
Yeah, I think it's made us say, like, because we had two daughters in college that came home, and all of a sudden we had three children back again. So we're like, oh my gosh. But it also made us think that, gosh, when we are, you know, empty nesters at one point, what is going to be our thing? Because when we were so crazy busy taking kids everywhere, doing everything, it was different. All of a sudden there wasn't that. And we're looking at each other and we're like, we cannot keep watching Netflix every night, but we do. Yeah. We do watch them. Because we love it.
Oh my God. You know, that's so funny. You know, we didn't even have a TV before COVID. I know that sounds so weird, but we were not TV people because we were always going out and like meeting friends and dinner and drinks. And we just weren't TV watchers. We just weren't. And then when this pandemic hit, we got our first TV and we're like couch potatoes watching Netflix all the time. So we are convinced, or we've, you know, basically sworn that once the world comes back, whatever that looks like in the next couple of months, we're getting rid of the TV because now it's all we do. And it's such a waste of time, but there's nothing else to do during quarantine, right? What else are you going to do?
I'm doing this 6 weeks of Brave Motivation with a group of our followers. And one of the things that we talk about is habit stacking. And I'm like, you know, we can give up the Netflix. We don't have to give up the Netflix, but you're going to have to get down and do some crunches on the floor. We're going to have to make it a little more healthy.
Multitask. Yeah,
exactly. So Erin, you know, one of the reasons, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on is that I just feel like your, especially your book coming out, really speaks to women. And, you know, we talk about finding our voice, like how can we find our voice? But it's not only finding your voice, like what do you do with that? And you talk about communication, how you can be more compelling. And I think for myself and for other women that I've talked to, there's a very fine line in how can I be bold, be direct, and not just come off as being a bitch. And that would be in a bad way because bitches be brave is a good thing. But, you know, how do you lead women in, you know, where is the balance and how do they find that?
Yeah, that's such a loaded, complex, layered question and such an important question to keep asking ourselves. You know, I read, I don't know who said this. This is somebody's quote that I'm stealing and I really want to attribute it, but I forget who I read it. But something about women, the unfortunate hand that we're dealt in corporate America particularly, is that we tend to be liked but not respected, or respected but not liked. I don't know if you know who said that. Somebody said that. Was it Sheryl Sandberg? Somebody said liked but not respected, or respected but not liked. And I feel like it's the truest thing I've ever heard when you think about it.
You know, and just like 10 women that I've worked with over my life just came into my head. And I'm like, that one goes in that box and that one goes in that box. Mm-hmm. I have not heard that, but 100% I believe that.
It's so, and I'll never forget reading that and being like, oh my God, why are there only two options? It's almost like, you know, when you think about the roles for women for so long, it was either like, you know, the damsel in distress, or like the shrewd, like no one likes her, bossy pants. Like there's never this, like, why are we being forced to be in these two boxes when we are complex and we are messy and we have all kinds of strengths and all kinds of weaknesses, just like dudes do. And I don't know if it's because men are so always looking to figure out like the column or the spreadsheet or the box that everything can go in to manage the compartmentalize the feelings or the emotions. I don't know where it comes from, but it is real. It is, It is limiting. And when you think about how you're communicating at the table, so for example, I'm only an expert on my own experiences. So what I can say is that in raising capital to start a tampon delivery service from a boardroom full of Newport Beach men, the one thing I know to be true is that no matter if it's men or women, corporate or entrepreneurial, when it comes to being heard, it's all about being persuasive. And being persuasive, the truth that we all know to be true is that persuasion is personal. Persuasion is so, so personal. And whether it's, you know, working in corporate America for that Fortune 100 company, auction.com, where my entire leadership team was all a bunch of white dudes, to the point that we literally had, I remember having a conversation, this is 10 years ago, having a conversation around the page of the leadership team. And they were trying to figure out people to promote that were underrepresented, just because they realized the leadership page, just like the optics of it was so. And this is like way before, you know, Me Too and Black Lives Matter and everything. I mean, this is like old school, and they were already like, wow, this is weird. But whatever, if you're in corporate or entrepreneurial space, the idea is as fast as you possibly can, identifying ways to build those bridges on a non-professional level. It has to be personal. For me, I learned how to golf. I started watching a lot of sports. You know, I started to figure out like, what is everyone into that has the power to say yes to me? And how can I find that common ground? I'm not saying not to be yourself. I'm not saying, you know, to all of a sudden spend tons of precious time with hobbies that don't fill you up and bring you joy and make you feel light. I'm just saying that trying to just talk louder or more aggressively, or with more, you know, this is the right and this is the thing, that's not going to work whether you're a man or a woman, or whether it's 1850 or whether it's 2050. It doesn't matter. We have to find ways to build those bridges and find that common ground. So I would say if you're in a situation right now and you're asking for more money, or, you know, for example, like when I didn't get that promotion, like I just jumped ship. Was that the smartest thing to do at 23? No, that was really stupid. I definitely should have found another, a smarter way to move forward. Like I very much regret doing that. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, oftentimes we think like either it's like just quit and find the better perfect opportunity, or suck it up and play by the rules. And I feel like there's a middle ground, and that middle ground starts with finding ways to build bridges, whether it's leadership team, clients, corporate America, whether it's your audience, you know, that you're online, on digital, finding spaces to like find that common ground as best you can. That's what I've done, and that's what's worked for me.
Yeah, and I wonder why that isn't natural. I mean, I've been in sales for many, many, many years, and I know, you know, companies, clients, they want to work with people they like. You know, you make that connection, you find that personal connection. But for some reason, in the inner circle of a company, we're not necessarily approaching it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think again, the male-female relationship could have something to do with that. Like, will what I am doing be relayed like, oh, she's interested, or, you know, that's not appropriate. So where is the, where, how do you guide where you would meet for, you know, personal versus a relationship.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's funny because if you think about it, so like, let's say you saw a 50-year-old guy dressed in a suit sitting at the bar, and he was sitting at the bar with, let's say, a 25-year-old guy in a suit, and they're talking and they're sharing, you know, they're sharing a couple of beers and he's mentoring him. You'd be like, wow, look at that. You know, mentoring that guy, fantastic. Now, if you just swapped out the 25-year-old for an adorable girl in her that's 25 wearing her super cute little J. Crew tailored thing, and she's sitting there with the guy, and you just saw him across the room, immediately, whether you're a man or a woman, would you think, oh my God, that's so cute, he's mentoring her, like, how darling?
No.
Like, exactly. So that the optics, without even hearing who they are, there's already this expectation that's already set up. So it's already doomed that people are going to think a certain thing, and that we cannot control. You can't like change society's bias overnight by your, right, by our actions or by our words. What you can do is you can decide whether to, again, to find a space that is not like everything's effed up. Like, it's just, I can't play this game, or I quit. Like, it's not about this extreme reaction. Like, for me, what I did, all of my mentors, except for one, when I was working in corporate America, were men, older men. Now, what I would do, again, is I would find ways to make it very abundantly clear that I was looking to them for professional guidance only. How do you do that? Well, for me, I talked a lot about all the guys that I was dating and joked around about them, about the dates I went on. I talked a lot about, like, you know, the Ravens game, football. I talked about golf. I just met them where they were, mm-hmm. and just made sure that everything that I was doing, like even my body language, like I would like punch them on the arm. I would fist bump them. I would say, like, I'd call them dude. I would say, what's up? Now, I'm not saying that you should, that worked for me. That's my style. I live in California. Yeah. I play D1 lacrosse. I'm already a little bit of a meatball as it is. So that worked for me, okay? Now, that might not be your style. It might not be you. So what's important for you is to find a space where you can be yourself, operate as yourself, but also feel that you are projecting an energy that is not open to anything other than professional alliances. And it's an energy that you're telegraphing in a proactive way. So it's not always waiting to respond to an uncomfortable situation, but for me, it was always about getting out in front of it. So I always made it abundantly clear from the get-go, like, I am here to team up, I am here to advance, I am here to learn. And I think, unfortunately, because if you have male leadership, there is that, back to the girl and the guy at the bar kind of situation, there is this predetermined obstacle that you're dealing with. Unfortunately, you have to figure out a way for you that works to be proactively clear of what you're telegraphing and what you're there to make happen, while also finding some way to connect with them. For example, maybe if you're a mom, or if you are, you know, you have a big family, talking to them about their kids or their wife, like, find the space that telegraphs immediately from the get-go that that's what you're there to do. So it just depends on what your personality type is, but for me, that's what worked for me.
Yeah. And would you recommend just throwing it out there and saying, you know, I really respect you. I'm really looking for you to mentor me. I'd like to have a call with you once a week or once a month and run some things by you. I mean, I think sometimes we're afraid to reach out and have those conversations with someone that may be a senior or an executive, and because, you know, why would they want to spend time on me? But, you know, I'm sure that a lot of leaders would want somebody that was motivated and wanted to learn like that.
Well, it depends. Agreed. It depends on the scenario. So it depends on the company you're working for and the space you're working for. I think if you're working for a very progressive company, like a tech company, like my brother works for Google. So if you're working for like a Google or a Snapchat or a company that is very focused on developing leadership programs and nurturing, I think that that kind of a direct approach, can I mentor you, works better in those types of cultures. If you're working for a more legacy organization, if you're working for commercial real estate, finance, you know, what, insert legacy company here, that type of approach sometimes doesn't land as well. What I have found in my personal experiences, and also in the different individuals that I've coached over the years, is that you're a lot better off bringing value. So doing the give before you, the get, before the ask. So for example, if you are looking to get mentoring experience, if you're looking to learn from someone who is a few tiers above you, for me, when I worked for auction.com, Rob Friedman, CEO and chairman of the company, I was like, that's the guy I want to learn from. This guy's a billionaire. He's a brilliant guy, but he's like 7 tiers ahead of me. So what I did was I brought value to him directly. I asked my boss, Mike Jansta, what is Rob struggling with? What is going on? What do you guys talk about in your meetings with the C-level? And he's like, oh my gosh, this YouTube thing, we can't figure it out. Da, 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 da. So I created a whole series. I was like, what if I interviewed Rob about the top 10 FAQs that our customer service team gets every single day? And mm-hmm. I'll do the whole entire thing on my time. I'll organize it, whatever, pitch the idea. Well, that got me personal time with the CEO because I was interviewing him for hours, solved a YouTube problem that was bothering him, got me the FaceTime, and also raised the company profile, helped cut down the call volume for customer service, bringing an answer. Now Rob's like, the reciprocity, right? Kicked in. Rob's like, well, tell me about you. What are you doing? How can I help you? And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you.
Now I haven't worked ask.
Yeah. And I haven't worked with this guy for years. And I just got an invitation to his 60th birthday last week. And we were still dear friends. And we have lunch twice a year. And he's like, tell me about your projects. Who do you need to meet? What do you need from me? How can I help? I mean, it was one concept from 10 years ago. And we now have this great friendship. Love his wife, love his crew. And he's, you know, 25 years older than me, whatever. And it was a great, I didn't go to him and say, hey, you're super busy, can you mentor me? He'd be like, screw you.
Yeah.
You
know? Like,
good point. Yeah.
Think about the idea that you can bring mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times we don't necessarily know what the challenges are of somebody that's 7 layers if you're working in corporate America, because you're getting communication that's coming down the line. So you're probably only getting part of that. So to be able to actually kind of drill, that also gives you a pathway, right? It's like, okay, yeah. I know what I need to be talking about, or if I'm sharing something, I want to bring in a piece of a trigger that I know is really important to them. So
yeah.
I really, really like that. And I think I'm curious that, you know, you're talking about what we can do as an employee. Do you also coach leaders on how they can empower employees to do this?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of being in the role of a leader and trying to coach your team, it's super important to explain to them how you like your brain to be extracted. Like, yeah. That is the most important thing, is like to tell them exactly how you need them to source what you have. Because as leaders, the number one reason that we aren't great mentors and that we aren't great at sharing what we know is not typically what they're asking, it's typically how they're asking it. For example, every single time that someone comes to me and says, can I pick your brain? I want to like throw up all over the table. Cause it's like, no, you can't pick my brain. That is just, I am like slammed. I'm time blocked. First, it's a gross phrase to begin with. But
yeah.
Second of all, you know, we have to coach them on getting very specific about the ask. You know, if you are looking for guidance from me on a project, if you are looking for, you know, advice on a big decision, I need you to, number one, do the due diligence, do your homework, do your research. Have you Googled everything you can possibly Google about this? Have you talked to everyone that's more accessible than me? Have you gotten super clear on what you want and where you're going? Secondly, when you come to me, when you ask, you have to kind of ask about the ask, right? So the ask has to be very specific about the future ask. So it's
right.
It's like, I am at a crossroads and I am looking at doing either A, B, or C. I would love to get your way in. Because the one thing that as leaders is so tough is being ambushed on something that it's like so far from the direction that we're going that you're like shooting off the cuff. It's not great advice. So if you can coach them on like, get really specific on a couple of ideas, a couple of answers, a couple of solutions, then you say, you know, I want to talk to you about that. Then your final conversation with them, you're coming to the table and you're like, okay, so you have A, B, and C. Here's the pros and cons of all three. If I were in your shoes, here's what I would do and why. And now you're able to better help serve them as well as maximize both of your time. So I think as leaders, the biggest thing you can do is coach them on how to communicate with you, because there's nothing worse than coming with an open-ended question or a blank slate. It's putting too much work on the leader to do the work that you can do yourself. Come to them with something and not nothing, and you will get so much more out of them. That's how I teach my leaders to coach their teams.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's verbal communication. And I think that transcends to written. You know, I try to talk to younger employees at the company that I work for, is that you know, when they have something, just to have like a 3-paragraph email is not going to get your point across by really just kind of what you said, like what drill down, because you want to kind of hit with the main points, right? So yeah. You talk about written communication. What are your thoughts there?
No, my first book was digital communication, 100%. And that's what I teach as well. I mean, it's sales training. It's basically that if it's more than a scroll on an email, I mean, think of how you feel when you open up that email and it's like the great wall of text, like the multi-scroller.
I have ADD. I'm like out.
I mean, we have full conversations, praise hands. Like, I mean, we have full, like 100 red heart, red dress girl, like fire emoji conversations.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like, we are processing so much information now, whether it's social media and digital and our news feeds and email, our brains cannot keep up. We are just like, you see that big email and you're just like, why? If it is more than one scroll on a mobile device or on a laptop, it is a conversation. Pick up the phone, get it done. When it comes to making these asks, it is so, so important when you're creating an email that you don't do dear diary mode, which we all tend to do, right? You open up a blank sheet and it's like, dear diary, everything that I want and I think and I feel and me and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That is the fastest way, whether you're in sales or talking to a leader within your organization, to get completely ignored or to get brushed off or to get a BS totally empty response.
Yeah.
The most important thing is in the first 10 words, that little power of the preview, like when you look through your inbox, that first sentence has to immediately telegraph to that recipient, whether it's a prospect or a boss. I see you. This is about you. There's something in this for you. It is about you in some way, right out of the gate. So for example, let's say that you are trying to secure time with your boss, okay? The first sentence of the email, your knee-jerk reaction is going to be, hi, Beverly. I wanted to reach out because I was hoping to, bleh. You sound like everybody else. It's all about you. There's like 4 I bombs. The least persuasive person in the English language is I. So you want to say, you know, it sounded like from last week's meeting that you have a focus on X. And here's the thing, finding out what the pain points are of your boss and your leaders should be actually pretty easy, whether it's 2 tiers or 7 tiers, because everyone loves to complain about what's wrong. Everyone loves to talk about what's not working. It is so simple. 1 or 2 questions and people are like, oh, thanks for asking. Blah, and they love to just, you know, bitch about it, basically, right?
Yeah.
So making sure that you're always leading with what's in it for them. If it's a prospect you're trying to get attention with, for example, I just got an email today from someone who's like, hi, Erin, I'm a PR agency. I saw your book coming out. You know that we're award-winning and us and our clients and me. I'm like, oh my God. Well, I got another email today from another PR company who is like basically saying, they have already researched my book and they quoted one of the blurbs as the opening statement. It looks like Laura Gassner Auden called your book a kick in the pants. And so for the very first sentence, I was like, ooh, she's researched me. She sees me. This is about me. Because we're all so self-centered, right? We're all in selfie mode all the time. So it's like that very first sentence has to be about the recipient or the entire thing looks like everyone else's messages and it's dead in the water.
Right, right. And sometimes when you're having a difficult conversation, maybe within the company, you're trying to get somebody to help you, you know, saying that I need this and changing it to maybe we have a problem. We need to find a solution for this client kind of brings everybody, you know, like, okay, we have a common goal here and you're coming to me for my help, not to tell me everything that you want or need me to do. So yeah. I do think that is so great. So Erin, you have a new book coming out and I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about it. I feel like it is so timely.
Oh, thanks, Beverly. Yeah. I'm so excited about it. It's called You're Kind of a Big Deal, Level Up by Unlocking Your Audacity. The whole book is all about getting that big deal energy out into the world, unlocking your big deal energy. I really do believe that all of us, but especially women, sometimes we get stuck, not because we don't know where to start, not because we're scared of starting, not because we're afraid that we're gonna fail, which can be a thing, but I really believe that above all the reasons what gets us stuck is I think that we respond to people's reactions to us in a way that allows us not to move forward. So as soon as we start a new venture or we start a new job or we start a new idea or we start something, we're all gung-ho. And then it's someone else's no girl, not a go girl. And that is what actually trips us up and gets us stuck and gets us retreating back into our comfort zone.
And where do you think that comes from? Why why do you think that we fall back on that instead of being more go girl?
Yeah, well, there's a chapter in the book called Ghosting Your Inner Good Girl. And I don't know how you were raised, Beverly, but, you know, in my house, my parents are wonderful. I told you they're coming to visit pretty soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, achievement equaled affection sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was true for you in your house, but, you know, the points on the board equaled the attention that you're looking for or the hug or whatever that, you know, you saw as a kid. And so oftentimes we equate like the gold star or not rocking the boat or going with the flow or just making things easier for everyone mm-hmm. as the way to win. And as we become older as women, these ghosts of inner good girls past, they follow us around and we find ourselves checking the temperature of the room all the time to make sure that everyone else is comfortable. And look, I mean, being audacious is what the book's about. Audacity is, you know, daring greatly and being bold, even if it might shock people. And I think people are all about daring greatly and being bold, but then shocking people or maybe even offending them, that's where we're like, oh, we don't want to do that, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you're not doing anything big, I mean, big actions ignite big reactions. People aren't going to react big to you unless you're actually doing something that matters, that's shaking things up, that is going a new, exciting direction. And so I think what the book's big goal is to help women reframe people's big reactions or maybe big rejections, reframe those from red lights to maybe that's actually a green light. Maybe it's actually a really good indicator that you're doing something big because, you know, if someone's rejecting what's happening, as women, we fear they're rejecting not our idea. We think that they're rejecting us as people.
Right.
And so that's what keeps us stuck because we want to make sure everyone's we want the people that we love to love our thing. And that's great. The book is not about like the worst advice ever, which is like, don't care what anyone thinks about you. Just don't care. It's like, that's insane. Like narcissists and psychos don't care what anyone think about them. Like, of course you want to care what others think. That's why we post on social media. I mean, we're looking for feedback all the time. That's not realistic.
Yeah.
But what big deal energy and being audacious really is about is when the stakes are the highest, when you're at a crossroads, when something really, really matters, it's about caring more what you think about your decision than those around you. And that's the difference.
Yeah. It reminds me of a post that I posted on Instagram yesterday that said, be the woman you want your daughters to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that with this, the generation of women in the workplace right now, you know, a lot of us were brought up by stay-at-home moms and dads that went to work. So we have this conflict. And so we're in positions right now, not only as employees, but as leaders to change that for the next generation. So I think your book will resonate with so many right now. And it's, you know, obviously everyone's talking about women in the workplace and how, you know, things are kind of going backwards with COVID where some had to leave and, you know, really standing up for what you need in your life and in your work. You know, I have that quote, it's an, you know, work-life balance is crap. It's really just the life we want, you know, yeah. But we want success in our jobs. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. And so we need to be able to have the, to be brave and step up and be able to say so and have a voice. So I love what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I love what you're doing in raising daughters and modeling it. I mean, you're walking the walk and to your point, I mean, I grew up, my dad went to work, my mom stayed home, just like you said. And so your generation with your daughters, I mean, this is the first generation in the history of womanhood throughout the ages. You are breaking new ground and women mm-hmm. for the first time ever are seeing moms that are corporate badasses like you. There, I'll never forget going to, before the pandemic, going to see Wonder Woman with Gal Gadot. And I walked out of that theater and I saw these three little girls running down the hallway and they were like, I'm a superhero, I'm a superhero. And I was like, wow, we never grew up seeing women as the heroes. Like that was, and that's not that long ago. And so just the change and the opportunity and the potential, it gives me chills just to think about
it. I was just going to tell you that. Yeah. I mean, we had Superman, Batman, you know.
A lot of mans. Yeah.
A lot of mans. So when is your book coming out?
June 1st.
And you can pre-order it, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
ErinKing.com. You can pre-order it. And if you pre-order the book, you get like a little bookmark, and there's all kinds of fun stuff. There's book club questions, and there's all kinds of fun Big Deal Energy swag that you can check out. And the Big Deal Diary is the supplement book that's coming out. I'm hoping by June 1st, we're still working on it, getting it out there. But yeah, so I'm really, really excited about it. It's for women. It's for women that are entrepreneurs, small business owners, leaders, employees, college grads, any kind of situation that you or a woman in your life is in where you just need to hear some stories of gritty gals doing big things and with strategies that you can use to just start small and take that one step towards getting unstuck. This is kind of what the book's all about.
Yeah. Are you going to be on Audible?
Yes, we are.
Good. Because I'm the habit stacker, so I want to listen to the book while I'm getting my butt outside.
I love it. Good for you.
So where are all the places we can find you? On social media? And
you know, I'm only on Instagram. I'm everywhere, but I'm not really, you know, I don't hang out. I hang out on Instagram, and I'm also a big Clubhouse fan. I'm not sure if you're into the Clubhouse.
Yes, I love it. Okay, I'm going to check you out there. I just joined a couple months ago. I actually was going to set something up for next week, so I'll look for you on there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, and Erin, what I always ask my guests, what does it mean to you to be brave?
Being brave to me means having the guts to go with your gut. Having the guts to go with your gut, because it is much easier said than done to trust yourself, to listen to that inner GPS lady that's screaming for you to turn left when the whole world's saying to turn right. Mm-hmm. The truth is, intuition is individual. Intuition is not collective. Intuition is not on the internet. Intuition is not in your family, in your friends, in your neighborhood, in your girls group. Intuition is individual. Only you know what is right for you. And it takes a lot of bravery and courage to respect and honor and authorize yourself to listen to that voice.
I love that. Yeah. Well, I love talking with you, and I'd love to have you back when the book comes out after I go for a run and read it. And I can't wait to talk to you again. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You too, Beverly. Thanks for all that you're doing. Have a great day.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I'd like to ask you, if you did, if you could please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and a 5-star rating, I hope. I really would like to get this podcast out to more women, supporting women, and I can't do it without your help. Thanks so much, and be brave.